Welcome back, footy fans, to another episode of Donnie's Disposals. I'm your host, Coach Donnie Hess, here back with another AFL round review. We have got to it. Finally, ladies and gentlemen, everybody has played six games. I know the start of the season has just been absolutely bonkers, but we have gotten to it. We have gotten through round six. So we got to talk about it. We got to discuss this insane round of footy, because I don't know about you, ladies and gentlemen, but tipping this round was mental. But before we go into it, let's introduce our co-host, the other half of the Creed podcast, and another very good Port Adelaide loving friend of mine, coming to us from South Australia, Mr. Jamie Oliver. Jamie, great to see you, sir.
Thanks, Donnie. Great to see you too. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's always fun. You and Dave are two of my favorite guys to talk to. We can talk for hours when it comes to footy. I absolutely love it. But you know what, sir? I
appreciate that.
it's always good. Like I said, I may be a Swans fan, you may be a Port fan, but you want to know what? We love footy, and that is the most important thing. So let's jump right into it. Before we get into the nuts and bolts breakdown, just your quick initial thoughts of this insane round of footy.
Well, if you tipped five or more, congratulations to you. I hope you bought a lottery ticket. I'm in the three category. but yeah, it was a very interesting round of football. Everything kind of aligned for round six in terms of the matchups. And I mean, it didn't really disappoint it. But just going back through the scores, it seemed like the round of the 7 or 8 goal swing. Because every match seemed to have at least one 7 or 8 goal swing within it. I think there was one that had a 6 goal swing, but yeah, a testament to momentum in games, and affecting the outcome ultimately.
I mean, it's just crazy. Like I pulled up my tipping thing because it's like I wanted to see, and I went 4 for 8, and I almost feel accomplished. And I moved up in all of my competitions, and I tipped 4. I'm like, normally, if you tip 4 in the tipping competition with 9, you go down. But I tipped 4 correct and went up in every single one of the competitions that I'm in. So it just showed you how this round was almost fantastic, because all of these games were like, you didn't know who could win it. Like, each game had a reason. You could argue, okay, I could tip this team instead of the team that you tipped. Like, I remember going through it going, each and every tip, I was not confident on any of these, because I was like, okay, I can see why this happened. So let's go through it. Probably what I have to say is an anticlimactic Thursday night footy, as the Dougies put a whooping on the Saints by 60. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, 60, 124-64. I mean, the Dougies came out of the kennel, teeth glaring, and the Saints just had no answer.
No. And I tuned in on quarter time and kind of breathed a bit of a sigh of disappointment, because I was expecting it to be a pretty competitive game. Obviously, the Bulldogs were coming off a lot of scrutiny in the media, and St Kilda generally play a dour defensive game. So although I probably thought that Bulldogs would come out breathing fire, I thought that St Kilda, at least from a structural point of view, would be able to kind of put up some sort of a defense, but they just handed the game over by quarter time, essentially, and they couldn't really make any headway back. They were shocked, and the Bulldogs just rid that for the rest of the game. On the Twitter sphere and in social media afterwards, it was I think from the Western Bulldogs corner of the world, it was kind of a bit unsurprising in a way, similar to my club, Port Adelaide. As a Bulldogs fan, it seems like they always knew they were capable of that kind of thing. But it had to come as a response to a disappointing loss, which is unfortunately a theme by the looks of it in that fan base.
It's just very interesting. I have a few Dougies friends, and you could tell, like, there was no surprise that they could do it, but there was almost a little bit of surprise at how they did it. Like it was kind of crazy. Again, this is a Dougies team that I the controversy going into this entire round is that where is the disconnect between Bevo and the coaching staff and the board? Because the board sits here and comes like, we've got a top four list. We should be making finals. We should be a contender for the premiership. And the way Bevo has kind of handled the last 3 weeks with Bailey Dale, Caleb Daniel, I mean, guys sitting out that are elite level players, are they as good as they were when they won the flag in 2016? Absolutely not. Nobody is. Father Time is undefeated. They're going to win eventually. But it's been fascinating that you could kind of tell that everybody's like, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Why are you making this decision? Why isn't McCray playing? Why isn't Daniel playing? Why isn't Bailey Dale or Ed Richards playing? Like, there was almost this like, hey, come on, how come people on the sidelines know how to coach your team better? And it's, and like I said, I've said numerous times, I make a suggestion, but that's only because I'm going off of what I know. I don't know what's happening at training all the time. I don't know if Caleb Daniels is missing 10 out of 12 kicks at training, and that's the reason that he's not getting the game. Or maybe McCray can't get the ball because Treloar and Bont are absolutely handing, you know, his rear end on a silver platter at training. I don't know that. But I do know that I've seen both of those players play really, really well for a long period of time. You would think they would get a game because of their experience over Riley Sanders, who's still kind of getting up to speed when it comes to it. Is he super talented? Absolutely. Is he there yet? Jury's still out. Still way too early. I never like making a decision on a player in six games, especially considering a couple of them he's been the sub. So that was the talk going in. And then now the talk is what the hell happened to St. Kilda, because this was not the St. Kilda we were expecting. The run and gun, they put up points, they scare teams, they went down to Geelong and nearly nicked 4 points from the Cats, which is looking would have looked even more impressive as good as the Cats have looked. Well, again, we'll
Yeah,
discuss that a little bit
absolutely.
later. But where did the Saints go? It was like after quarter time, they just went, eh, we're done. And they waved the
Yeah,
white flag.
absolutely.
It was insane. Like, I'll bring it to me. I watched this game up to halftime at work because there's I can only get up so many times super early to watch these games. And this game started at like 4:45 in the morning. So I went to work and I turned it on. And I'm one of those that if a game gets blown out, I will fast forward to try to see if the game gets closer. If it gets closer, I stop and I watch the game continue. After halftime, I started fast forwarding and it never got any closer than
No.
58 points. And I'm just like, well, there's no reason for me to watch this. This game is over. Went all the way to full time. And I was like, okay, I didn't miss much. I may miss a few great plays here or there. Like I said, I can go back to the statistics and look at a couple of things if I wanted to. But I did, like literally from halftime on, I just fast forwarded through the whole entire second half because it was over. And I hate doing that. I don't like doing that. But this game was literally, as you said, it was over at quarter time. They waved the white flag, they rolled over, they played dead. And so I'm hoping Ross kind of lit into them after it, and hopefully they bounce back because that was the putrid performance. I know the doggies are talented, but that this was no way in any shape or form should have been a 60-point win. So we'll jump to the classic at Adelaide Oval on Friday night. And I know as a Port supporter, this is probably a very interesting situation. Essendon get the 3-point win, but the controversy happens again. Like, hey, misery is my best friend, Adelaide Crows. And again, I love my Crows supporting fans. Some of you guys are absolutely fantastic, but they are snake bitten when it comes to it because another controversial call that potentially can cost them 4 points.
Yeah, absolutely. And as football fans, we have a recency bias where we focus on the last decision, moment, or what have you. And look, obviously I'm not going to, wipe anyone's ass or anything like that. Excuse my language, but the way that I saw it, I watched a lot of the game, and look, the Adelaide Crows acquitted themselves quite handsomely, considering the fact that Essendon just kept blowing chance after chance after chance after chance. And the funny thing is Adelaide were actually the team that kicked the seven goal swing in this game, but I think they were the only team over the weekend to do that and end up the loser. So, accurate goal kicking on their behalf kept them in the game for the second week in a row. Going back to their win against Carlton, who equally blew a lot of chances. And good kicking is good football, bad kicking is bad football. That gets thrown around a lot, and it kept them in the game. And they had a lot of moments late to actually snatch it and get their second win on the right, second win in a row. Sorry, but quite honestly, I do feel that Essendon were the better side across the whole four quarters. And they, you know, if you're going back in terms of decisions called one way or the other, they have a bit of a case to put forward in terms of some rough deals along the way. Every game, well, I won't say every game, because I actually think, you know, we never talk about the good umpiring performances. We only ever talk about the bad. And you know, Essendon, they did what they needed to do. Controversial finish. But I think the right team won at the end of the day, which I'm sure that it hurt to hear from a Crows fan.
No, they let it every single quarter break. I mean, they have 2 points at quarter time. They're up 5 points at halftime. They're up 3 points at three quarter time, and they're up 3 points at the end. So, and for big chunks of this game, Essendon was in the lead. There's only a little section where the Crows got going. I think they kicked like, I think it looks like, yeah, three or four goals in a row before Langford kind of breaks it up, and then they go on a little run where Langford kicks three in a row before Ben Keyes gets back into the lead. So this is one of those, again, is it easy to just go, well, they cost them the points? Absolutely. But I, with every umpiring decision comes some kind of controversy. Do they have a gripe? Absolutely. Does it help that the AFL comes out and apologizes? No, it really doesn't. Like there are moments when I'm just like, just don't say anything at all, because all you're doing is showing that your umpires aren't perfect. And again, I've made this crow a lot, and I keep hearing these complaining media members and people on the radio calls about why are they doing all these. If you don't stand down an umpire, these umpires aren't going to be coached to
Yeah, I've seen you
review if
pretty
there's
vocal about
any question.
that.
I've honestly, this is the can of worms that the AFL opened up, and now the media is complaining about them trying to put the can, proverbial weld the can back together. It's very frustrating. I don't complain about the umpires. I never have, because I feel that there are tons of calls that are absolutely correct that are never talked about. Like, that's a great, like, that umpire did a fantastic job. You're never, because it's not topical. It's not what people want to hear.
No.
So I look at it like this. Do they have a case? Absolutely. Do they have a gripe? Absolutely. I think if you look at it, you have a strong case that Draper laid there like a dead fish and never tried to get the ball out.
It was a dumb moment of football
Well, I think
that you
it's
can't deny.
well, and then the funny thing is Lee Matthews comes out and says that it should have been a push in the back for Draper on Tex Walker. And I watched the replay 5 times after
Yeah.
and went, I'm still trying to figure out where he landed on his back,
No.
because Walker is sitting on his
He sat
tail.
around him how you should when someone's laying flat on the ground.
He's sitting on the ground holding his stomach to show that he's got possession of the person with the ball to get the holding the ball call. Does he knock it back under Draper's chest to be sure it can't come out? Absolutely. But Draper puts his hands out like he's skydiving on the ground, which then doesn't help his case, because Draper has no way of disposing or getting rid of the footy at all. So, and Draper kind of sits there like a yoga pose at first too, before he
It
does the
was just
arms
really
out,
strange.
which I'm just like, it's a really weird situation that I think he realizes the ball's underneath him. He can't take possession. He's not trying to take possession. So when he does the arms out, I think he thinks that, hey, I don't have possession. I just happen to be on top of it, which is not exactly what
Yeah.
the rule book states is possession.
Well,
So
and I think Collingwood last year typified the close finish, obviously, and they were great proponents of actually keeping your feet and taking possession in traffic, because you can't get done holding the ball if you're not laying on the ball. You can kind of just get away with hunching over the ball and kind of like ambling over it while keeping the ball off your opposition, which is all he had to do. Like, he's big enough to hold off a couple of people, and he had teammates around to protect him too. So yeah, it was just really stupid, really
Yeah, it was
strange.
it's one of those, like I said, it'll go down in infamy. Is it a look that I like? Absolutely not. It is not, because you hate games that it's going to be talked about every single meeting. Like, I know it. Like, I'm getting ready for my day, and I have all of the podcasts to listen to. I have each of the rush hours from Sydney, from Adelaide, and from Melbourne. And I know it's going to be a topic on every single one of those shows. They're going to discuss it, especially the SA rush hour, because Adelaide, I mean, well, pardon the pun, I'll say it simply, they have a right to say we got screwed. Again, is it completely true? No, because Josh Rochelle had a chance to win the game. Darcy Fogarty had a chance to win the game. Every single behind in this game, if it kicks straight, they win. So the moment is easy to pinpoint. It's the same thing
Yeah,
with the key.
absolutely.
It's the same thing with the keys thing last year. But I have had some Crows fans tell me this, the reason they didn't make the finals was not just because of the Swans game that they should have won because of the shit call. And again, I will openly tell that to every Crows fan. It was a shit call. It should have been called a goal. I completely agree with you. But it's not down to that one thing as the reason. There are other factors of the reason why. You're in a 3-point game at that point. How many behinds did you miss that probably were easy ones? How many times did you give up easy goals early in the game? There's so many more factors to it. It's not that simple. So I don't want to bang on about it again. I'm gutted for the Crows because I think they really needed that one to kind of stabilize their
Oh,
season.
they absolutely did. Yeah, for sure.
So, and the other reason that I say that as talking to a Port supporter is this is the most dangerous Crows team when they play Port, is when they have nothing to lose, when they can play just, hey,
I know.
we've got to
I
win. And
know.
it seems like whenever they play in the showdown, the team that is not expected to win is usually the team that plays their
Yeah,
best game of
unless
the
one side
season.
is really, really poor and in a rut.
Exactly.
Like, some Port and Adelaide teams in the
So
recent and distant past, but
yeah. Yeah. So I look at the showdown, and I go, for the Port supporters that I know, I go, this is the utter scariest thing for Port
oh, no
fans.
one's comfortable, and it's
No.
a fortnight away. It's not even this week.
And that's what I mean, is that it's early in the season. So it's that's how kind of crazy it is. But it's like I said, the Crows did their damnedest. I'm happy for the Bombers. I think that they've had some rocky roads. It's a great win. You get 3 points at the Adelaide Oval, which is never easy to win at. So, but you feel for the Crows. I want to find the nearest Crows supporter, give them a hug, because and I understand the Vic bias and everything like that. And it's like, well, you can't really say that against Sydney, because Sydney is not a Victorian team. They might be established originally in the Victorian team, but they're not. But we
Oh yeah,
won't go there.
conspiracy theorists would probably disagree.
Victoria
Light.
my other favorite is they get all these handouts. It's like, okay, when did handout teams get a two-year trade ban because they signed Buddy Franklin perfectly legally?
Technically, everyone gets a handout. They just don't like to admit it.
Yeah, very true. So we won't go there. Okay, so unfortunately, now that we're done discussing that one, we have to go to
Are
the
we
game.
done?
Do
I'd
we want to skip this one?
be happy to. I have to talk about it for 2 hours tomorrow. No,
Well, let's we'll make it
no.
light. Plain and simply, we'll jump over the MCG, where a very hot Port Adelaide start off very well, and unfortunately don't end that way, as the Collingwood Magpies come back roaring back to get a nice little win over the Power, 123-81, a 42-point win. I mean, as I was telling you off mic, I mean, I watched the first quarter of this game, and I thought, oh my God, Port Adelaide's going to hand Collingwood their tails on the silver platter right here in front of everybody on the MCG stage. But Collingwood had a hold my beer moment and came roaring back.
Yeah, it was quite interesting, and from a Port Adelaide perspective, unfortunately, like I alluded to in the Western Bulldogs game, in the aftermath, there's a large portion of Port Adelaide fans who were not really that surprised in the end, unfortunately. Obviously, it fits a stereotype that is very well known within Port Adelaide circles and probably without at this point in time. But yeah, I mean, I was at home alone, so watching it in my living room, which is kind of dangerous because I can just let my emotions take over. And yeah, like quarter time, and to be honest, halfway through the second quarter, it was fantastic. It was a good contest. I mean, on a Port Adelaide perspective, we were doing everything right and making Collingwood look second rate, and looking how they were looking for the first at least four games of their season. And then we stopped and the crowd got involved. Collingwood flicked a switch and they harkened back to their premiership winning year last year, and the pressure gauge just went off the charts. And yeah, Port Adelaide, although, like I said, good kicking's good football, it couldn't even save us on this occasion. Collingwood were just way too good in the end, and particularly in the second and third quarters, Port Adelaide were just meek. They dropped the bundle. There's no light way to put it.
Yeah, I love the honesty on that one. It's one of those again. Did we see the pot to have the pies figured it out? Which I think many people in the competition are going, please no, but we'll have to see again. I don't know. Again, up and about pies. It'll be fascinating to see them this week in the Anzac game against Essendon, because I think
Sure.
both teams are up and about. I think you're gonna get 95,000 even during a weekday. I think it's gonna be insane, but it'll be fun again. This is I kind of hear that. I hear that talk. Our Port Adelaide flat track bullies, when they play top eight sides, they don't play as well. When they play out of top eight sides, then they play fantastic. It's I don't again, it's never easy to win at the G, especially when Collingwood get up and about. If they can get on a run, which again they feed off the Magpie Army, and I think it's something I've said numerous times. If this game is played over Port Adelaide and they have that start, I don't think Collingwood comes back. Honestly, that is my honest to God opinion on that one. The Pies fed off it. They got a couple of goals. They got some momentum. The crowd gets up and they start to play out of their skin. I'm not as worried about Port Adelaide. You're gonna have a stinker here and there. It's perfectly fine to have a stinker on the road. Are there some concerning signs? Absolutely. Is there enough time to fix what the issues that you have? You hope so. You really, really do. You're hoping that the coaching staff under Kenny Hinckley can figure it out. Again, still a lot of time still to go here. That it's frustrating to lose a game that you had a chance to kick the defending premiers when they're down, and unfortunately, they kip up like a WWE wrestler and kick you in the face. So I hate to go there again, but we'll jump
Well, they
off this
did.
one. Pretty
I mean,
much.
I'm happy to discuss it. Like, it's football at the end of the day, and you can't shy away from it. Port Adelaide were trying some things, to be fair. Like, if I do want to put my apologist hat on, which I'm, not afraid to do from time to time, it keeps me sane. Port Adelaide were trying some things. I think they got some things wrong with those kind of efforts of shifting magnets and whatnot, and we came up against a well-rested, pretty full strength Collingwood side, from what I understand. I think from the premiership team, they were only really missing, well, Taylor Adams didn't even play in the premiership, but and now he's part of your
Well,
football club.
Murphy who started, but
Murphy,
that's
obviously,
I think
yeah. So there's obviously a bit of emotion.
Oleg Markov is down at the VFL, and Noble
Yeah,
was in
he
for
is.
him.
Yeah.
But that's the only difference. Other than that, it is pretty much the premierships. That was pretty much the premiership side. So.
Yeah, so like you said, I genuinely believe, I think you have a similar viewpoint, is that I think the season actually starts now. Like, the first six rounds, in my opinion, are the cobweb shaking off
Yep, the hashing out. Yep.
rounds, to for want of a better term. And now is when we'll actually see teams shifting gears, the cream starting to rise to the top, and whatever other cliche you want to use. But yeah, look, the flat track bully thing comes out when Port don't beat what people presume is going to be a top eight team away from home. But our record last year was quite handsome. Obviously, we let ourselves down in the finals, and 2022 is chucked in there, although we weren't contending and we finished 10th or 11th and had like 21 in-season surgeries, which is a bit unfair to use that record, I believe. So yeah, but we've in Port Adelaide fans' eyes, we've failed two tests now. Obviously, Melbourne, where a lot of people believe we were the better side, but we couldn't get it done, which again is another stereotype of the Ken Hinckley era, and Collingwood at the MCG, which it's not how it's not that you lose, it's often how you lose, which is what gets people upset.
Yeah, I'm one of those. I'm the jury's still a tiny bit out with both of these sides. I think there's still a lot of growth. There's a lot of encouraging sides on both. Like I think Jason Hart-Francis has finally started to finally find his niche in this midfield. You've got Butters and Rosie. You don't have to worry about being the number one gun in that midfield, and I think that's great for him. No Charlie Dixon hurts a little bit because it lets Darcy Moore take Marshall, which I think then kind of throws Marshall off because he's not used to having the top defender when Dixon plays. There's a ton of tons of things there that I think there's some positives Port Adelaide. Again, does it suck that you lose? Absolutely. It's early in the season. You can recover from it. I still think you've got a very, very good list. I think Zirk Thatcher and Radicalia and Alier have worked so far. We'll just have to be sure that hopefully injury does not again, touch wood and all that you
Yeah,
don't
I
have
think
any
they should have
issues
room to
back
improve
there.
as well.
Exactly. And they're not perfect. It's going to take them time to gel. Sometimes it takes 15, 20 games. So we could see the best Port Adelaide defense come round 22, 23, 24, just before our finals. So we'll have to see. So we'll jump off
I
and
definitely hope so.
we got to talk about this next one because this was an
Sure.
absolutely insane game at Marvel Stadium as the Carlton Blues roar back and take the zero in the loss column away from GWS as they knock off GWS for the first time this season, 117-98, a 19-point win. This game was fun for me because I went into it because both teams have significant injuries. Sam Taylor, Stephen Cornelio out for GWS. You have Adam Saad, you have Mitch McGovern out for this Carlton Blues. And this is one of those where this was not the greatest game by Charlie Curnow and Harry Mackay. This was not. Were they the reason that this game flipped a little bit? Absolutely. When you kick five goals, the two of you combined to get this run going, and then Carlton starts having all of that fan base start to get up and about. This is a fun team. Walsh is back. Cripps is starting to play some of his best footy that I've seen him play in a long time. DeConing kicks three goals from that kind of rotating ruck, resting full forward situation, which is always good when you can get three goals from a ruck position. That's always fantastic.
Absolutely.
And they played pretty well defensively despite the injuries. So this is the Carlton team again. Did they knock off the premiership favorite? As of right now, that was the talk. Again, I still think there's a lot of footy still to be played. This is a GWS team that know Sam Taylor again next week. They've already ruled him out. How do they go up against Brisbane, who we'll talk about here next? There's still a lot of discussions. Is this Carlton team great too? We'll have to see. Again, they've shown some vulnerabilities. They've shown that this year contested footy has not been their strength, which has always been their strength with Cripps and Walsh and that midfield of Kennedy and Hewitt. So we'll have to see. Impressive win by the Blues here, knowing that they have a couple of really good players sitting on the sidelines during this game.
Yeah, it's one of those games that as a fan, you're just on cloud nine afterwards, and you feel that all the off-season talk and movements that you make and the training that you've done is all starting to pay off a little bit. And to be honest, Saturday was a bit of a write-off. You have to forgive me. I was
I can
obviously
understand
down in
it.
the dumps a little bit in regards to football. So the two games that we're going to speak about now and the next game, I didn't put a whole lot of effort into watching. But yeah, at the end of the day, you mentioned the Carlton crowd, and I've been to Marvel Stadium a couple of times. And when the roof is closed and you've got a parochial fan base, particularly one that would outnumber GWS so handsomely, it's loud. It's very, very loud. It would have been deafening. Once they got a run on, and again, they were the ones to kick their seven goal swing or whatever it was, and it would have just been electric to be on the field as a Carlton player. But yeah, the opposite for GWS. And I guess it shows, like, if I'm going back and putting my Port Adelaide hat on, is like any team is susceptible to those huge momentum swings that can put you out of the game. And And Carlton inflicted that to GWS. And now the talk is, you know, if GWS are without Sam Taylor, are they all of a sudden quite vulnerable? And I think it's probably a bit, that's a bit too simple to say. Yeah, like you said, the injury list that they've got, they lifted when they needed to, and they needed to respond. They would have been disappointed losing to Adelaide at home the week before, after dominating the game as well. So, they would have got a rocket when they needed to, and they responded.
Now I look at it like this. It's like I don't think Sam Taylor is the reason they lost this, but I think it is the opponent that they played that
Yeah,
it
it was
was
bad
like
timing.
worst. It was the worst possible situation. If they played a North, if they played a Hawthorn, if they would have played a Western Bulldogs, it's not as dangerous because you don't have two really good tall forwards that both play and work off each other really well. Kurnow and Mackay, worst possible matchup. I think if you ask most Giants fans, they probably would have preferred to play Collingwood this week instead of Carlton because at least you don't have the super good, super tall forwards because Taylor can take one of those out and then they can kind of system together a group to take care of the other. You lose that. Now, okay, who takes who? Because it's a matchup nightmare no matter what you do. Because if you give a Connor Iden, you give a Buckley one of those two monsters, who takes the other? So it is Sam Taylor was one of those. He could erase one and then you could kind of focus your team defense on stopping the other, or at least maintaining the other from being a problem. This is just one of those. GWS faced the worst possible opponent with the loss that they had of losing Sam Taylor. So I'm one of those. I'm not going to like downplay the Giants. I'm not saying, well, the Giants are weak because they're no, because I look at the Sam Taylor injury and I can go, okay, if Sam Taylor plays this game, does Mackay or Kurnow get off the chain like they do? I don't think so. I think he eliminates them like whitewash. And then it's can they minimize the other to the point where Carlton can't go to their talls? They start looking and they go out wider. That's lets Buckley and some of their really good moving halfbacks be able to get intercept possessions or get ground ball footy and be able to rappel back out and then get that orange tsunami going. So this is one of those. GWS faced the worst possible opponent. Blues capitalized. They did an 8 goal run with Harry Mackay and Kurnow kicking 2 to 3 apiece. It is that's just an
And then
absolute
deconing for fun
mad.
as well,
Yeah,
like
and
another score.
deconing adding a couple of spicy, adding a couple of nice little goals in there as well. This is a blue side at their best, which again, they still have never been at their best. They've always had at least one of their top 22 out. They should legitimately be in the discussion for premiership because they've got a really good list. Walsh is back now. Wietering is now back healthy. Yes, that like I said, they're missing Sod and missing McGovern. When you get those two back, this is a very, very good Blues team that on their day can beat anybody, especially if Kurnow and Mackay can kick consistent double fig consistent 2, 3, 4, 5 goals apiece. If they do, it is night night, shut up shop, because it's very difficult to stop this team because very few teams have two great defending talls. Most people have one. Not very many have two, which then lets one of them get off the chain. And if you flip, then the other goes off because they don't have that matchup anymore. So fantastic game of footy. Like I said, I'm one of those. Carlton is one of my favorites to watch because anytime they can be quite the entertaining, they can be absolutely masterful. And then sometimes they can be absolutely pitiful, which is actually kind of a great transition because this next one is one of those, it's a win. It's an impressive win, but we have to say that the weather was not very
Not
suitable
pleasant.
for footy in the long run, as a winning score is 63 points. And I was just looking through this. There's only one losing score that was below this winning score. All the losing scores in every other game was at least 1 point higher. It is insane. The Cats get the win, 63-37, and like I said, in tsunami-like conditions, But you got to give the cat the you got to give the cats their due. They're a makeshift midfield, really good defense, really good forwards, and they lose Tommy Stewart to a concussion in this game.
Yeah.
Hats off to you, Cats. That is an impressive win on the road at Brizzy. I know Brizzy hasn't been at its best this year, but that is
No.
a damn good, impressive win by the Cats there.
Yeah, and yeah, just on your last point there, Brisbane at the Gabba, it's all of a sudden fallen in a heap this year. Like after not losing a game at home last season to dropping, what is it, three so
Three of
far
four,
at the
yep.
Gabba? Yeah, three or four. Yeah. I mean, that's like that profile isn't like top four is basically like you need to be winning 90% of your games at home. You people teams drop one here and there, but losing three or four like by round six, like it's that's a worry because then you got to grab them back on your away journeys and yeah, it's no m mean feat. But yeah, look, again, I didn't watch a lot of this game. I tuned in at various stages and yeah, it was pouring with rain and but in the end I look at it and Brisbane had 17 scoring shots to 18. So they didn't handle the conditions as well as Geelong did, obviously. And Geelong are just obviously the professional outfit that everyone kind of hopes is going to fall away for whatever reason. But it's the beauty of that club is that they just keep showing up year after year. And when they don't, there's probably a overarching reason and a legitimate reason like last year. But yeah, that. Like you said, their midfield's humming, albeit with some different names in there. Losing arguably one of their best players, probably their top two players in Stewart, and still getting away with it. Yeah, it pains me to say that it's, yeah, it's fantastic effort away from home.
Yep, there are three losses to Carlton, to Collingwood, and to Geelong, all at the Gabba. Now, again, not North Hawthorn, the Western Bulldogs, three, but it's still
Yeah.
the Gabba was it was a fortress last year. You just did not beat them at the Gabba. So to drop three of their first four, that is tough, especially considering they have had trouble going on the road and winning games in the finals. So to drop three of their home games, you gotta try to go on the road and steal a couple. And for some weird reason, Brisbane has not traveled real well this year, not traveled real well over the last few years. So again, this is one of those I chalk it up to the Cats are just they're a good team. They're structurally very sound. They can absorb the loss of Stewart and still play really good defense. You have guys like Parfitt and Bowes and Bruin and
They've
Holmes.
lifted.
They're not household names, but they get the job done. You've got Hawkins, you've got Cameron, you've got Stewart, you've got some of these superstars. But they don't have to be the game winners. They're doing their job. They're doing exactly what this Geelong team seems to always find a way to do, and that's when they need to get a win, they find a way to do it. So, hats off to the Cats on this one. That was not, I literally was I was chatting with my co-coach, and he's a huge Cats supporter, and
Right.
I'm talking to him the whole time as I'm watching this game. Like I've got the game on in the background. I'm fully paying attention to Bolt. I don't know how I did it. But I was literally looking at, and the Cats just, they were cleaner. They marked the ball so much better. They had less fumbles. I mean, there were still some impressive feats like Lincoln McCarthy bouncing the ball like a basketball right up to himself and then being able to kick it. I got to admit
Yeah,
that was pretty
sometimes you can get away
awesome.
with that in the wet.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
some interesting things happen.
Oh yeah, and then was I also I later saw that it made me chuckle a little bit that during there was a break or during one of the breaks, there's actually somebody in the stands found a lizard in the Gabba,
Of course.
which led to a funny tweet at Nick Blakey, the whose
The
nickname is the
lizard,
lizard from Sydney.
yeah.
It's like why is Nick Blakey at the Brisbane game? And it shows a picture of a lizard there, which I got a kick out of that made me chuckle a little bit. So
Yeah.
this was one of those. Is it one to write home about? Absolutely not. This is one of those. If you're Geelong, you go, thank you. We'll dry off and go home. Bye bye. And if you're the Lions, you try to pick apart what you can. But again, this is conditions. It's really hard to make adjustments off of this game because Like I said, they were playing in a monsoon almost the entire game. The fans that stayed during that entire game and weren't wearing ponchos, you are legends, legitimately legends. Like they showed some people that were not wearing ponchos and they were sitting in the stands, no cover and enjoying it. I respect the heck out of you people. That is fantastic. So we jump to what arguably has to be one of the biggest shockers of the weekend, and that is the Western Derby, as the West Coast Eagles beat the Dockers 105-68, and Harley Reid mania is taking over Australia.
Yeah, and he was robbed of the was it the Glendinning Medal
Think
that
so,
they
yeah.
award?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Elliot Yeo is
This
impressive. I'm not gonna fully jump on that. I think Elliot Yeo played a
he yeah.
really good game, but it's hard not to argue that Reed taking a screamer and kicking three goals in this game
Three
and I'll,
goals.
it's just an easy way to say this is that my team of the week may have a certain West Coast Eagle instead of another. We'll talk about that
Another.
later, but I mean, who wasn't impressed by this young man absolutely going bunta in one of the biggest games of his career so far?
And it caps off a good 3 week period for West Coast, to be honest. I watched a fair portion of their game against your guys, Sydney, in Gather Round, and then I watched a fair portion of their game against Richmond last week. And I guess, if anything in football, if you're giving maximum effort, it is going to bridge whatever talent gap that you have against your opponent. And like, this game is the epitome of that. Not many people, apart from some one-eyed West Coast supporters, would have tipped West Coast. Although Frio, they can't score, so it gave West Coast a bit of an in on their home, both of their home decks. And it was another one where I, my chagrin for football had kind of subsided a little bit, and I was kind of intrigued, obviously, with Frio coming off two losses in Adelaide and West Coast having a couple of good weeks, just how it would kind of play out with West Coast when they're on, typically over their existence, have been a fairly attacking side. And Frio at the moment have gone back to their defensive ways. So it's a two clash. It's a clash of two different styles if both of them are on. And yeah, flicked it on in the second quarter, and West Coast put him to the sword immediately by the looks of things, and they didn't let it go. They gave maximum effort for the whole game. And when you're up on top of that maximum effort comment, when you've got senior players who are fit and playing well, it's worth its weight in gold. Like McGovern and Yeo in particular, but Kelly keeps on keeping on. That just lifts your whole side. And Waterman is in a rich vein of form at the moment, and quite an accurate kick too. So yeah, a very impressive win for West Coast. And yeah, very interesting to see how the rest of the year pans out for them now.
Yeah, it'll be really interesting. I know I told a few friends of mine. I said the toughness of the West Coast Eagles against Sydney now doesn't look as bad as I originally thought it was at the time. Like there were some people like I will be honest, that West Coast game was much more stressful for me as a Swan supporter
I can
than I thought
imagine,
it was going to be. And then I watched them win the next week and I'm like, well, maybe. And then them pulling out that performance there, I was like, okay, like that looks a lot more impressive with even with the win by Sydney now because of how good Harley Reid kind of got his start against Sydney when it comes to it with his rich vein of form. So sorry,
Yeah,
competition.
that's
We
a good
didn't
call.
mean to kickstart the young man, but we did. And which is really funny because my friend last week, Gil Griffin, is a huge Fremantle Dockers supporter. And I literally got a text message before I'd even watched this game. And I knew that West Coast had won just by his text message because he literally texted me. And again, Gil, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry to put this out there, but he texted me. He goes, "Why oh why did I actually get up in the middle of the night and watch every minute of that Frio shit show?" That is literally the text message I have. And I was like, okay, well, West Coast won that game. I didn't even have to watch the game, and I knew West Coast had won just by that reaction. Again, I hate spoilers, but it made me chuckle a little bit. Not at Gil, but just I was like, okay, well, West Coast has finally woken up. So there goes the priority pick discussion and all of that. Now the funny part is now the microscope has gone from West Coast. What the heck is wrong with them to another club, which we'll discuss here in just a little this bit. But again, Barras playing well, McGovern playing well,
Yeah.
Waterman playing like Plugger Lockett out of the goal square. Holy crap.
Darling's doing more
Harley Reid, Darling
recently.
making an impact, and there's still no Oscar Allen. So
True.
I'm going to say this right now. I don't want to play West. You do not want to play West Coast right now. You don't. They are humming. They're gonna
Yeah, I think I was saying to Dave
annoy
actually.
teams. They're gonna
Yeah,
annoy teams going on that if you played them early, you're
Yeah,
kind of
which we
going,
did, Port
yeah.
Adelaide.
We both
Yeah.
did. So
So thankful for that, especially at the moment. And then they could drop off. Like,
yep.
they are
Oh, and
still working their way back up, but it's a good month for them.
injury is still gonna they're not a super deep team. So if injury starts to get them, if Barras goes down and McGovern goes down, if Waterman goes down, if Reed goes down again, cross my fingers, touch wood, if Kelly goes down, if Yo goes down, if any of those big guys that are really performing right now go down, it could change this. But right now they are humming. You don't want to play the West Coast Eagles. That you just don't. So we jump over to the SCG, as the Swans get an impressive 53-point win. And as I told you off mic, I was nervous as all get out going into this game because the Suns have been rather impressive this year. I think they've played some really good games. Have they had a stinker or two? Absolutely. But this is a young side. This is a team that is still growing. There's a lot of 18. They kept talking about it on the coverage. It almost got to nauseating factors. Five teenagers played in this game for Gold Coast. Sydney made him pay for that particular decision, but I understand Hardwick is really changing the guard and letting the young talent play. Sydney, very impressive. One crap quarter in the second quarter made a lot of Sydney fans go just before halftime. But the third and fourth quarters, they got their kicking game going. The pressure went up. They started having Armadi go off, Logan McDonald go off. Tommy Papley has a mark of the year that looked like a slips catch in cricket, which was pretty awesome. And then he slots it from the pocket, which was. I had a few people at the SCG who I went back and forth. I said that was probably the loudest they've ever heard the SCG besides the premier, the prem, the pre, the preliminary final against Collingwood a few years ago. So an impressive win by Sydney, a win over a Gold Coast team that I think, again, was this the best Gold Coast team? Absolutely not. Is this team finals ready? I don't think so. I still think there's a year under Dima before we should be talking finals
Yeah,
with this Gold Coast team.
that's fair.
But this is an impressive win. This is an impressive win by Sydney. This kind of tells the competition, hey, we had our little rough patch. We lost to a Richmond team that, again, this was not the Richmond that played West Coast. This was the Richmond that had Noah Bolta. They had Prestia. They had Lynch. They had Taranto. Some of their big losses that they didn't have against West Coast, they did have in that Sydney loss. So it's not really culpable for me. I don't think it's the same discussion point that they lost to a bad Tigers team. They lost to the Tigers team that was the best they had all year before injury bug, I mean, literally struck them down.
Yeah, absolutely.
So.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people would be in the same bucket where not too sure where Gold Coast are going to finish this year. And it would be easy to go, oh, it's Gold Coast, you know, they'll finish outside the top eight as usual and it's normal programming. But yeah, there's signs there that they could grab a bag of wins, particularly with their matchups to come. And yeah, they're building a bit of synergy. I didn't watch a lot of this game, I'll admit. And yeah, I can see what you mean about the second quarter. But it's just good to know after a win that when you're challenged, respond to it like you should, assuming that Sydney are going to be up and about come the end of the season, like we kind of expect them to be. At the end of the day, you're challenged and you responded and you put away a pretty big victory in the end. Like you got it done. And football's not always one way traffic, rarely is. So you can't argue with that.
Yeah, this is one of those again. Is Gold Coast talented? Are they going to knock off some teams they're probably not expected to? Absolutely. Was this Gold Coast best game? Absolutely not. Their turnovers were atrocious. I think 2/3 of Sydney's points came off forward half turnovers because of their pressure. They were forcing Gold
Yeah.
Coast into turnovers. And when you kick accurately for Sydney, that really hurts because their kicking is some of the best in the competition. I mean, Errol Goulden absolutely was throwing darts in this game. It was insane. Isaac Heaney is probably in a situation where the Sun may be jealous of that's how hot Isaac Heaney is playing right now, it is insane to see him go off. Chad Warner's back up to his great form. James Jordan played a really good game. There are very few people on this Sydney team that I can sit here and go, I think they had a bad game, because,
Yeah.
and this is not just Red Hat Donnie. It was an impressive performance all in all. And then seeing Sam Wicks come back after some of the drama that happened with him playing really well and showing why he was such a he's such a great addition to this team with his forward half pressure and his tackling. So it's fun. Again, I love Gold Coast. I think they're going to be so much fun to watch. Rogers debuts in this. He did not look out of place. I think he looked really well. Ethan Reed, he did get subbed out, but I think this was just a game where they weren't getting forward half pressure, so they weren't getting it into him, so he didn't have as big a game as he had previously. This again, Jed Walter again shows why he is absolutely one of the best in the country this year. He's going to be so much fun to watch grow up, and he's only 18 years old. He already is a
Yeah,
man. It's
scary.
insane. He's 18 years old, and he's bigger than I have ever been. It's mental. It's just absolutely mental. So I think Dima's got some good things to work with. Does he have 80% of his premiership? I don't think so, but that's just me personally. I think he needs some veterans to round out this team that I'm not sure he has right now. But Gold Coast could become a destination club with the super amount of young talent coming on. So we'll jump to the last one, which is kind of anticlimactic, because I was intrigued by this 17-18 matchup, which is not something you normally say. But North got an invitation to the party for a game that they had a chance, and Hawthorne, I mean, they bullied North in this one, a 113-68, a 45-point win. And as I said, that microscope went from West Coast and it's back on North again. Is Clarko really the savior, or is he got too much of a mess on his hands that even the great Clarko can't fix it?
Yeah, I mean, he was blessed with some blue chip talent in the Hawthorn days. So, and look, you could argue that he's got that in North at the moment, but it's all kind of concentrated in one area. Yeah, look, for me, I'm not surprised. Like, Hawks let themselves down the week before, but they've been pretty good for the last 12 to 18 months, to be fair. And after having such a bad loss, it was a great game to respond with. Like, North Melbourne are just fodder for anyone coming up against them. There's not a whole lot of promise, to put it bleakly. Like, they just keep getting torn apart. And yeah, like, if we're talking about West Coast before, at least they've got some seniority to prop up the rest of the team. North Melbourne losing Cunnington, for example, last year, and not having much around that. Their defense is just a bunch of no-namers, whether through injury or otherwise. It just puts them in such a vulnerable position, because you're just reliant on your midfield to win the lion's share of contests, and it's a young midfield. Obviously, coming up against another fairly young midfield, but Hawthorn's midfield is traditionally tough. Well, not traditionally, but this iteration of Hawthorn is pretty tough, albeit young. And again, they let themselves down in that regard last week. So yeah, they were obviously going to respond, and they did. I mean, it looks like after halftime, North were competitive, but the score had already blown out, and that was it.
Yeah, this is one of those. I think Hawthorne is, they've got a little bit more grunt and a little bit more experience there. I mean, Jai Newcomb's not young, Warpole's not young. Do they have Day and some of these guys that have been really, really big for them over the last couple of years? Absolutely not. I think that's the thing. Like, I agree with you. Like, Colby McKercher, Jeff Wardlow didn't even play in this game. He was managed, which I find fascinating that a 19-year-old
Wow.
kid is being managed. I found that a little peculiar. Instead of just telling the kid he's dropped and we're going to manage him, which puts even more of a weird spin on it. I think the Roos have some talent. The issue they run into is the one place they need the most talent, they don't have it, and that's in the back line. Mackay leaving, it's left literally a Grand Canyon sized hole in their back line. Griffin Logue is out for the year. That doesn't help either. So
No.
I'm gonna give North a pass on this just the littlest bit because again, they play off a ton of momentum sometimes. LDU is still playing really good footy. Jiří's doing the best he can. Again, he's a trier at this point because he's gonna be a mismatch no matter who he goes up against. He's not a bad ruck. He's running it. He keeps running into rucks that are just better than him. Is Lloyd Meek fantastically better than him? Absolutely not. But Lloyd Meek kicks two goals in this game. That's one of the differences there when your ruckman kicks two goals in a game. That's tough to take. I agree with you. Like I agree with and Dame and Damian Barrett said the same thing. You're almost looking at Clarko in a little bit of different colored glasses because he did have that advantage of some of his the really good talent was either already there or came in the year he came in, like Buddy, Roughhead, Hodge was already there. So it's like you do have that argument that he has not had an average team and built them up. He had a good team that became a great team because of the talent that they had at their disposal for it. So I think the microscope has finally kind of come to Clarko now is Clarko actually the right guy to make the changes? And it'll be fascinating to see. So I don't want to, again, I don't like the pile on the North because I think this is just a situation where I think they're trying. They're in a hole right now, and there's no simple way of getting them out of it. So
It's a world of pain.
exactly. So we'll jump to the burning questions. I love our chat. It's always so much fun. So we'll jump to the burning question. We'll start off with a team that I think again is being talked about, and that's Carleton with an impressive win without their losses. For you, sir, are they a genuine flag contender?
Well, it was interesting earlier. I think it was in the preseason, Sam McClure, who obviously is much maligned in the footy world. But he kind of made the point where he said, well, why wouldn't Carlton be the flag favourite? They've got arguably the most balanced side. And I mean, we were kind of talking about it before. They've got two world-class, and I'll say world-class, why not, forwards in Mackay and Curnow. And their spine is handsome, and they've got role players doing their bit and some blue chip talent all around that. The balance in their side, they've got a little bit of depth with which they haven't had in the past. And like you mentioned in our summary of their game, they've got injuries at the moment, but their system is bridging that gap with the depth players coming in. So they made a prelim last year. Their team hasn't really changed. It's arguably got better because they've done another preseason together, and it just kind of seems like obviously they are one of the flag contenders for this year at this present time.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. They have the spine. I hear it said all the time. Their spine is one of the strongest spines in the entire competition because you have Charlie Curnow. You have Charlie Curnow at the full forward. You've got Harry Mackay at the center half forward. You've got Walsh. You've got Cripps. And I think De Koning and Pitnett are enough in the center. And then you've got Wiedering, and then you've got Saad Williams and McGovern through the center. So you've got a very, very good spine. Injury, I think, is going to be the one deterrent for them because Williams is now out. So their entire halfback line is out now. No Saad, no Williams, no McGovern. That's tough. They've had a next man in situation. It's worked all year. We'll have to see how it goes. Again, we're early in the year. I'd rather have injuries now than injuries in round 22, 23, and 24. So
Oh,
if
don't I know that?
if you look again, I think Carleton is legitimately in the conversation. I think there's four or five signs that you can legitimately put in that right now. Again, is it going to expand potentially? We'll have to see. I think GWS, Sydney, Collingwood, Melbourne, Carlton right now are my five. Port's close. I think it just can they solidify themselves? And then Brisbane, if they can find out whatever is wrong with their Gabba hoodoo now, is those are the kind of seven teams. And then it's who gets that eighth spot? Is it St. Kilda? Is it Fremantle? Is it Essendon? Is it the Western Bulldogs? We'll kind of have to see. Is it Adelaide? So there still isn't Gold Coast. There's that muck between 8 and 14 is going to be fun to see who gets out of the pool with the least amount of, hits. It will be the fun one on that one. So
Sure.
we'll go to the negative side really quickly, and we'll try to keep this short. Should the competition be concerned of Norse dismal performance?
The simple answer is yes. They've already offered them assistance several times, and they don't, right now, they don't seem to be making any headway. Excuse me. Not only that is, I believe that just due to the Victoria problem, like with so many sides, it's hard to attract A grade talent when you're one of the smaller clubs in your state or in your city. You haven't had a lot of success recently or this side of the century, and there's a obviously a salary cap that everyone has to adhere to, and sure, you can throw money at players, but they've already tried that and it hasn't worked. So you're probably relying on people who have supported your club growing up, which again, I think Dustin Martin did, and he's one of them that they threw money at. Now, obviously, that was a very successful period of time for Richmond, so why would you leave? But yeah, you're relying on people who've grown up supporting you or fringe players at other clubs. People at the end of their careers who do offer seniority, but if they're not great players, then they're just filling gaps for the time being. And the AFL can't keep offering them assistance. And I think they've come out and said that, priority picks and that whole system is probably going to be folded soon. So it's up to you as a club, and I believe they're debt free and whatnot. And as a small club, they've probably that that not probably they have made a lot of inroads in terms of their off field, but at the end of the day, you're still the smaller fish in a big pond in Melbourne, so you're pushing shit uphill most of the time.
Yeah, and I don't think this is a simple fix. I just think that it kind of like what West Coast had an issue with, but it's kind of the opposite. Like West Coast had the issue of they held on to their superstars for too long. I think a year too long. And then 2020's absolute shit show when it comes to them not wanting to be in the hubs, I think it set up West Coast. And the reason that they're in what they are is because of the list management was atrocious again. I'm sorry, West Coast fans. I don't mean to harp on about it, but it is. I think West Coast were the, and Melbourne was in North Melbourne was the opposite. I think they dumped some veterans during a time period that they kind of needed to keep them to help usher in the next era of youngsters. And they went the full axe. I mean, I think in 1 year they cut 500, 600 games worth of experience.
Games,
Boomer
yeah.
Harvey, Petrie, and Del Santo, and one other one, all in 1 year. And I think that is the reason, is because is that they cut experience that they probably should have kept. And then the Pollock deal from Port Adelaide that just absolutely imploded in their face to an almost insanely crazy degree. There's been mismanagement after mismanagement. It's like, I don't want to pile on North, but I think North needs to be talked about. Is that, again, they may be a little bit of their football management has been a little bit of the reason why they're in this situation. Can they fix it? I sure hope to God they do, because the competition really looks bad when you're a 0-win team 18 games into the season. And right now, I'm having a hard time seeing a win. And I hate saying that again. I hate saying that. I don't want that to be the truth. But right now, it's looking like a harsh reality for those at North Melbourne. So we'll get off of that. And we've kind of alluded to it a couple of times with our tipping. I mean, this was probably the most 50-50 round of footy I have ever seen. Like I said, I don't have the years of experience as some people. Can you ever remember a round of footy being this unpredictable? I mean, as I said, tipsters, as you said, if you got five, you're a genius at this point because nobody saw some of the results that happened this weekend happening.
Yeah, look, there's so much football, and you do get rounds like this every season. But for me to recollect one, I couldn't tell you. So I can't remember one this difficult to tip. Again, probably recency bias. But one thing that we know is that it was definitely very, very hard to put a good score on the board,
Yeah,
which
it
is good for
was.
football, really.
Yeah, well, and the best part about it is that it doesn't mean that I hate when I go into tipping competitions and I know I can go 8-1 easily like that. It takes the intrigue out. It takes the fun out because it's like,
Yeah.
oh man, like
Well,
so
I'm sure
having
viewership may have been up as a result because people be like, oh, well,
can't
how's my
miss
tip
this
going
one.
to go?
Can't miss
Probably
this
through
one.
extra bets, gamble responsibly, of course. And yeah, people tuning in. So yeah, around like that, the AFL would love.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, and like I said, it kept me intrigued the entire weekend. I could not keep my eyes off this weekend. I thoroughly enjoyed it. That was such a fun weekend. Were some of the results a little lopsided? Absolutely. But I mean, some of the
Sure.
results just they came out of nowhere, and I absolutely love that. So, last but not least, my final question is always about if I know my co-host has a team that they love, I like to ask him a question about it. So, I know we had our kind of Debbie Downer moment. I'm trying to be positive, so I'm going to let you have your chance to have your positive. Your Power, unfortunately, had a rocky time again. The Pies can do that sometimes at the MCG. Is this a temporary setback? Is this just we're at the G? Sometimes it's not always easy. Or is there concern coming off the loss this weekend?
It depends who you are, really. I think a lot of Port Adelaide supporters would go, yeah, we're going to win enough games. We're a good enough team and club. Like, it's the problem is for a large portion of Port Adelaide supporters is they want to win the right games for them. And unfortunately, up until this point, we haven't. But at the end of the day, like, Dave and I did a couple of preseason shows, and we're looking at the first 6 weeks of football. And most people, I mean, we tipped that we would probably be 4-2, if not 5-1 with a lucky break, at this point in the season. And I made the point of saying that early wins are vital for the reasons that I've already expressed in this episode, because everyone's shaking off the cobwebs and the season doesn't really start until right now. Traditionally, like after round 6 or 7 or 8, I think it is, the top 8 doesn't really change that much. And we're fifth. Like, a loss like that had the background that you would think that it would cause us to slide down the ladder quite feverishly. But at the end of the day, the AFL is so even that we had a very bad loss, but we're still only, I think, percentage out of the top four. So with that in mind, yep, everyone expects us to beat St Kilda this weekend. And then we get challenged in the showdown. Like I said, I think we'll win enough games to make the finals. I think we'll win enough games to probably challenge for the top four again. And I expect to challenge for the top four. We just want to see some wins in the right games. We've failed a couple of tests. And like I said, last year, our record against top eight sides in the home and away season was quite handsome. So again, the flat track bully line comes out when we lose them, but we've still got opportunities to remedy that, like you alluded to as well. So long story short, yes, no hope is lost. The season can be remedied and we can still challenge and be a formidable force come the end of the season.
100% with you. Only four teams are ahead of you on the ladder, and you've got a nice healthy percentage of 121.2 right now, and you've had a couple of tough ones. So Port Adelaide is going to be one of those that, like I said, it's health, especially at this time of year. And going on is, can you keep the majority of the list healthy? Can you keep your big time players, your Butters, your Rosies, your Jason Horne Francis's, your back line, your Dan Houstons, your Charlie Dixons? Can you keep them healthy? The more you
Sure.
have them on the park, the better. If you can get a rest into them when they play one of the lower sides, go ahead and do it because you're going to need them for finals. It's great that you win a home and away game, but in the long run, winning a premiership is the number one on that one. So
Absolutely.
I'm
Yeah, for sure.
100% with you. It's never easy to win at the MCG, especially against a Carlton, a Collingwood team that they kind of have their backs against the wall. They needed to win that game. So it's a danger game. So you didn't, I, does it suck the way you lost? Absolutely. But I still think, again, I would rather have that loss early to where you can fix the errors than have that loss later in the season and have question marks going into a potential finals campaign on that one. So
Sure.
we jump to the part of the podcast. I kind of take over just the littlest bit,
Yeah.
and time is running out on me because we are recording this early in the morning and I'm getting close to my work time. So I'm going to try to fly through this.
Yeah,
So if I say
it's
this
nearly
a little
bedtime
bit
time for me,
fast for
so that's
those
all
on the
good.
podcast, I'm sorry on this one. So we'll jump to the defenders on the team of the week in the fullback line. I hate saying it, but Braden Maynard of the Collingwood Magpies, Nick Blakey of the Sydney Swans, and Jack Lekosius of the Gold Coast Swans are the fullback line. The halfback line sees the resurgence of Bailey Dale from the Western Bulldogs, Nick Martin of the Essendon Bombers, and St. Kilda's Ryan Burton. In the mids, on the wing, sees Jared Berry and Ben Fiorini of the Gold Coast Suns. In the middle, we see Tom DeConing as the ruck from Carlton. The Western in the center sees the Western Bulldogs, Bontem, Marcus Bontempelli, GWS's Josh Kelly, and West Coast's Harley Reid. Yes, I went there, ladies and gentlemen. I went there.
Surprise.
On the forward and the half forward line, sees Joel Armati of the Sydney Swans, Hawthorne's Dylan
Nice.
Moore, and Collingwood's Pat Lipinski. And the full forward line sees Jacob Plugger Watford, what is that? Waterford.
Waterman.
If I can, yeah, Waterman. Carlton's Harry McKay and the Western Bulldogs' Aaron Naughton. On the bench, defender Jack Scrimshaw of the Hawthorn Hawks, ruck Lloyd Meek of the Hawthorn Hawks, Adelaide's Jordan Dawson in the midfield, and the forward Paul Curtis of the North Melbourne
Yeah, wow.
Roos. So, real quickly, your thoughts on that team of the week.
Just quickly, I believe you said from St. Kilda, Ryan Burton. Did you mean Riley Bonner?
Oh yeah, you're right. I
On the
think you
halfback
actually
line.
that would be no, actually I think that OMG, now I gotta look at my list. You're gonna make me pull up
Only
my
stuck
notes
out because
here.
obviously they're two Port Adelaide personalities, obviously one playing for St. Kilda now.
Sorry, looking at my notes mid-podcast. Sorry about this, ladies and
Sorry
gentlemen.
to do that to
Do,
you.
do, 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 do. No, you're good. No, I appreciate it. So I made the mistake one time of accidentally putting, no, it is Port Adelaide's Ryan Burton. My apologies.
Yeah, wow.
I put the wrong one. I was thinking Bonner and put down Burton. It was Burton that it was actually. So it was Port Adelaide. So I got a power player in there.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Yeah,
So
yeah.
I, like I said, a halfback line, fullback line. Sometimes it's like if you can kick a goal from defense, I add that as
Oh,
a
he
little bit
did
of a
too. Yeah, I forget
caveat. But
about
yeah, he slotted that one early and just edged it in by like a coat of paint. It was an impressive goal. So
He has a few like that at the MCG, but yeah, look, overall, I mean,
usually it's Dan Houston the one that gets that one because
lately,
he always
yeah.
finds a way to hammer one from 55. So.
But look, lucky to have one Port Adelaide person in that team. So I won't stick on that. But yeah, overall, fairly strong lineup. To the teams that won, yeah, most of them won fairly handsomely. So, the Jake Waterman's just such a character. Obviously, like I said, I've watched a few West Coast games recently, and I believe his brother played for Essendon for a little bit there. And I think one key attribute between the two of them is they're actually quite long, accurate kicks for goal. And he seems to be in a purple patch where you just need to put it in his area and he's good for a mark or a contested mark. And for players like that who are so accurate, as an opposition fan, you're just like, okay, back to the
Chalk
center
it
we
up onto
go.
the board. Exactly. All right. We'll quickly go through the power rankings for this weekend. Again, not a ton of movement, a couple of losses here. So there is some change. At number five, we see the Melbourne Demons. At number four, GWS. I know they lost, but they're still an impressive 4-1 in their last five. I tend to go off of the last five on form. At three, the Carlton Blues. Number two, the Sydney Swans. At one, I can't disagree with this one, the Geelong Cats at number one, the only undefeated team still left in the competition. So we'll jump to it, sir. We have to tip. And the best part is we get footy in less than 48 hours because of the Anzac Day weekend. So, and for those
Sure.
of you that are listening, keep an eye out. My logo will change. I have last year's Lest We Forget Anzac Day logo. I will have that up for the podcast. I have to do
Cool,
that in
cool.
respect for it. Like I said, many Australians that I know very well. So again, I send my respects to those Anzacs that have done that ultimate sacrifice. Again, thank you for your service. So we jump to it.
Absolutely.
Anzac Day Eve, Richmond, Melbourne, a very, very good game here. I'm going to tip the D's on this one. Richmond again being held together by duct tape and this at this point. D's going well. Both teams coming off the bye. I like the D's in this one.
Yeah, so do I. For the reasons that you said regarding Richmond, but Melbourne are now coming off a bye. And if it's anything like how Collingwood came off the bye, yeah, Richmond could be in a bit of world of pain. But with these kind of marquee games, sometimes they throw up surprises. So I still expect Richmond to be fairly competitive for a period there, whether it be early or hopefully not late after the game's kind of already gone. But I do expect some competitive moments for them. Just how long they can sustain it. But yeah, Melbourne for me.
Yeah, Taranto and Hopper were both playing in this game, I'd be a little bit more bullish. But the fact that Taranto's gone for at least another 4 to 5 weeks, and that's the spot where Melbourne really hurts you, is that midfield with gone Oliver, Viney, and Petrarca, and the rotationals that they have through there. It's a bad matchup at like the worst possible time. So the Anzac Day game, I love this one. I think you're going to probably get 90,000 at this one. Essendon v Collingwood. Who do you like in this one?
Yeah, I can't go away from what I saw on Saturday. And although props to Essendon for their performances in the last two rounds, I'm scared that Collingwood are picking up where they left off last year. And yeah, this game was a good game last year. Essendon really came at them, but Collingwood, in true Collingwood fashion, responded late and, been monikered the comeback king. So yeah, should be a good game, but. Yeah, I think Collingwood are on their way back up, unfortunately.
Pies win this one for me, but I'm not sleeping on the De Bombers. I think they found some momentum. Sometimes a win
Yeah.
like that can really galvanize a group.
Sure.
Now they have so now they almost have a selection issue because Peter Wright comes back from his suspension. Do we
I
see
know,
a
yeah.
Draper or a Goldstein get dropped for the big forward? How does that handle? Can Stringer and Langford keep their goal kicking? It's going to be a fun one. Essendon's in this, but I think Pies win it just a little too much. Too much of their system, I think, will work too well. A fascinating one at Manuka Oval up in Canberra as the Giants host the Lions. And as of right now, Jesse Hogan, Toby Green, both suspended. For me,
Yeah.
if these stay, I like the Lions in this one. I think that hurts. You're already down Canelio. Ward is not the same, but two of your best goal kickers, and you don't have replacements in the VFL. You don't. Cadman can do it, but I think Cadman benefits from McCarty and Hare and Hogan and Green being there. I don't think they can make up for that loss of your Coleman leader and your captain. Brisbane win this if both Green and Hogan stay suspended.
Yeah, an interesting one considering that they're both coming off losses, and Brisbane away. So yeah, like we were saying before, they've got to snatch a group of wins away. I just don't know what Brisbane is going to come out, and I have a feeling that one of those two players are going to get off. Don't know which one at this point in time.
Hogan, I think, is the more
But I
likely to get off just by looking at. Hogan's most likely to get
Yeah.
off just because they can say that it was a glancing blow instead of a full-on strike. Personally,
Sure.
I think
I think that's pretty, yeah.
if the green one gets flipped, people are gonna lose their friggin' minds, especially with Peter Wright missing 4 games for something that was close. It was not
Yeah, very
exactly the
similar.
same. It was not exactly the same, but this is one of those, I think. Green stays off. I think if anybody gets off, it's Hogan. Honestly, as much stink as some of the media put off after George Hewitt didn't get off after that blow that did get Lachie Neale in the chin,
Yeah.
I think they both stay suspended. It's the other reason why I think I tipped Brisbane is because I don't think either will be successful getting off.
Yeah, right.
But they got to
Yeah,
use the
because
good, they can use the good bloke argument now.
sure, everyone can now. I mean, Cadman and I think Callum Brown has had an underrated start to the season, and I don't
He's
think
played
Toby
really well.
Green has had a fantastic start. He's been serviceable and he's a champion player. I'm going to go GWS at Monica. It's a flip of a coin, really, and it wouldn't surprise me if Brisbane did win and recaptured some form from last season, but I just don't trust them at the moment.
Completely understand, which is really funny because right now Brisbane actually is the betting favorite, 190 to 194. People, I think, are seeing the Toby Green and Hogan suspension, but I'm
Sure.
with you. It is a coin toss, even with those two out on that one. So a fun one. I'm hoping you get a chance to go to this one, the Adelaide Ovals.
Yeah, I'll be
Port
going.
Adelaide v St Kilda. Head or heart tip here? Power, Saints. Who do you like?
I like the power. If we're the team that we claim to be and want to be, then we simply win this game. We are a good side at responding to losses. This is at home, Anzac Day round, which we actually put on a fairly good performance ourselves. We award a Anzac Day medal as well in our game. We played St Kilda a lot in our Anzac Day fixtures as well. So look, much like the Fremantle game, I expect St Kilda to kind of try and drag us down to their level, considering that they didn't get away with their game plan on Friday night or Thursday. But like I said, I believe that Port Adelaide are the team that we expect them to be and that they want to be. And if that's the case, then they actually win quite easily, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think Power win this one. I think the firepower, hopefully Chaz Dixon is backing for this one. If the St. Kilda
So
that
do I.
played, if
Love
the
that guy.
St. Kilda that played this weekend, it should be a mauling. If St. Kilda, if Ross tears the paint off the locker room because of the atrocious performance, I think you see a bounce back. I think this is a tougher St. Kilda. But I think the midfield battle is going to be interesting. Can Ivan Saldo kind of neutralize Rowan Marshall will be fun, but I think your midfield is
I think he
much,
can.
much, I think your midfielder is much, much stronger. Horn, Francis, Butters, and Rosie, I think, have the advantage there. And I think that's going to be the biggest thing. If they can get Marshall and the Port Adelaide forward line going, I think it'll be a long day for Cal Wilkie in that back line. So I like Port in
Absolutely.
this one. An interesting one right after that, Blundstone Arena down in Hobart is North Melbourne host the Adelaide Crows in this one. I'm going to tip the Crows. I don't trust North right now. I know the Crows, this is kind of the perfect matchup after everything that happened with Essendon. This is the perfect matchup, but this is also the one that could scare me as an Adelaide supporter because you're coming off a loss, you're coming off complaining about umpiring, and you get a North team that literally has nothing to lose. They play well down in Hobart. This is a potential trap game. Crows win this one, I'm keeping an eye on North. This could be a trap game for the Crows.
Yeah, I'm going Adelaide for sure. I don't think they've been necessarily as bad as what their record shows. I don't think they've been very good in saying that. But I don't know how you can tip North Melbourne. I think I've seen a few Adelaide supporters in social media already kind of catastrophizing. Catastrophizing is a better way to pronounce that word, but yeah, kind of already setting up the hypothetical if North Melbourne were to win. But I just think Adelaide are too balanced to let North Melbourne get away with it.
Yeah, that'll be an interesting one. And then we jump to probably what has to be the game of the round. And again, Geelong hosting Carlton at the MCG.
This will be a fantastic game. I'm actually going Carlton.
I'm going to
It
tip the
wouldn't
Cats.
surprise me either way.
I'm going to tip the Cats because I think where the injuries are is in the most dangerous spot when it comes to the Cats because Jeremy Cameron, Tyson Stengel, Grian Meyers, that you cannot defend them with second tier defenders. If we Wietering will have to take Hawkins as long as Hawkins is in the lineup. Who do you put on him? Like I this is a screamingly danger game. The fun part will be is can who wins the I don't know who you are popping out of my Wheaties ruck battle between DeConning and Reece Stanley, which will be a fun one, which will be a fun one on that one. And then it's superstar midfield, Walsh, Kennedy, Hewitt, Cripps versus the I don't know you cup of Bruin, Bose, Parfitt. So structurally wise, this is a fun one. Stewart hurts, but Stewart is not the most important defensive situation here. It's DeConing, and do they have the tools to be able to take both of those out? I think this is going to be a shootout. This is going to be who scores more, and I think
Yeah, I think the MCG is going to be
there's more.
rocking.
I think there's more consistency in Geelong when it comes to their full forward line than there is. I'm going to tip the Cats in this one, but this is going to be an absolute slugfest. Cannot wait for that one. We jump up to Optus Stadium and the Holy Crap Cup in this one. Fremantle, Western Bulldogs. I have no idea how to tip this one because
No.
neither team am I comfortable with. Fremantle can't score. Western Bulldogs can score, but sometimes can't play defense. OMG, this is great defense, great offense. Which is better? It's either going to be a dour 60 point fest, or it's going to be a goal fest, and the Bulldogs run away with this. I'm going to tip the Doggies only because I think their offense can run up. Fremantle just can't score. Darcy back will help against English, who surprisingly got towelled up in his last game, even though the Doggies played really, really well. Oh boy. I'm going to tip the Doggies in this one, but I have zero confidence in this one.
This will be a very telling game if Freo drop it after starting the season so well, to go four on the trot losses if they were to drop this one. Yeah, that's, sees the rest of the season looks very bleak for them.
Yeah, definitely for
But
sure.
surely they can't, like, surely they can't lose. I'm giving them the tip purely on home ground advantage.
For my Fremantle supporters, I sure hope you're right because a loss here could it could throw Fremantle. Like my friend Craig Wessels will be laughing because he at the start of the season said that he thought West Coast and Fremantle would be 18th and 17th. Well, right
Right.
now, 18th ain't looking so good for West Coast, but Fremantle's not looking too bad for 17th if they don't find a way to start playing better. But I digress. I don't think that'll
And
happen.
they
So
have, I was just about to digress, but
they've
I'll
already
just
got
quickly
three wins.
say
They've
I
already got
rate
three
their young
wins, and
forwards.
I don't think Hawthorn and North are going to get past four. So I don't think they'll get down to 17th, but they'll be down. If they lose
Just
this one, I think this could be a long season for Dockers
they're two
faithful, and
forwards,
this one.
Fremantle.
And Jackson is not a full and Jackson is not a forward for me. He's that hybrid wing midfield type of he's
Sure.
so good in the ruck, but the problem is Darcy there. It's like I've said it numerous times. I think Darcy should have
Yeah,
went to
I
the West
rate
Coast
Amiss
Eagles.
and Tracy as young forwards, so
Well,
just get it to
but
them.
Majai Amiss is going to be out in this game with concussion, so and
Oh,
that
of course.
hurts. That
Yeah,
hurts.
shit.
All right.
Absolutely.
We'll jump to this is going to be a fun one. Gold Coast versus West Coast. People's first stadium at Gold Coast. Who do you like in this one?
Think playing it on the Gold Coast does help the Gold Coast fundamentally. And like yeah, obviously been on the West Coast train a little bit the last few weeks, but I think Gold Coast probably, if they're tracking the way that Dimmer Hardwick wants them to, and we kind of get the vibe that they are a little bit, then it'll be a good game, I think. But Gold Coast for me.
Bugger it. I'm tipping the West Coast. I
Yeah.
think Elliot Yeo, Kelly, and Reed, I
Sure.
think they are going to give West Coast problems. Bailey J. Williams is just enough. I think he's going to annoy Witts, and I think he can make Witts run around the field a little bit more. Jeremy McGovern can intercept Mark, and for me, Gold Coast bombed it into their forward line to their talls a little too much, which will give Jeremy McGovern a field day. And
Absolutely.
if Plugger is still kicking the way he is and Reed's going forward, that's a dangerous combination of an experienced with a superstar talent versus a lot of talent and not a lot of experience. I'm going to tip the West Coast. I know I'm crazy. I
Go
know I'm
for
probably going to miss this one
it. Yeah.
because it's at the
How
Gold
our
Coast,
perceptions have changed
but
with West
I'm
Coast.
going for it. Forget it. I'm jumping on the West Coast train on this one. So I will tip in the Eagles and this one.
Awesome.
And last but not least, MCG in Melbourne, Hawthorn v Sydney. This is not a head versus heart tip. Sydney just too good. Hawthorn, too many injuries, inconsistency. Brody Grundy playing well. I think Sydney just too good. This is one of those. Can Hawthorn keep it to a decent loss, not an overwhelming loss?
Yeah, I'm going Hawthorn. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, Sydney. Yeah. Sydney professional outfit and Hawthorn had their win against North Melbourne. But yeah, Sydney are far, far ahead of Hawthorn at the moment. And they'll get a healthy contingent of supporters at the MCG too on a Sunday twilight fixture.
Yeah, it's interesting. Last game of the round. It's a 1 a.m. start. It's a 1 a.m. start for me. So
Nice. Yeah.
always the fun one. So I try. And the
Get
crazy
your
part
coffee out.
is my team, the Roosters, are playing some scratch matches down in Kansas City earlier in the day. So
Right.
hopefully I can come back home and get a nap in real quick before that game starts, or it's going to be a long 24 hours of footy for me.
I
Not
wish
that
you
I will
very
mind.
well.
Not that I will mind. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. But that is going to do, Jamie. Again, just like your companion, Dave, when we get talking, time just seems to just disappear. I'm literally looking at my clock. I've got about 10 minutes before I'm supposed to start work. So we are going to
Yeah,
end
I'm
this
thinking
episode
that too.
somewhat rather quickly on this one. Again, thank you for listening. Again, we'll have this out again. I will have that Anzac Day logo up on my social medias for it again, lest we forget. Again, my respects to all of those Anzacs. Again, I cannot wait. I have footy on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday to help me get through my work days. I absolutely love it. So that'll do
Awesome.
it for us here on Donnie's Disposal. Again, thank you again so much for listening. If you like what you listen to, please like and subscribe. Keep an eye on it for more footy coverage. Again, keep an eye. More to come very, very soon, as always, with the VFL, Sandful, and Waffle coverages as well. We will see you again very, very soon here on Donnie's Disposal.